Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
You talk about your John 316. Well, Austin 316 says, I just whipped your ass. This is Tom. I'm with Jeff. You're listening to The Payoff. Jeff, how the hell are you doing, my friend?
Doing great. You know, another good week in wrestling, all that different stuff. You know, you and I creeping up on our anniversary as well here too. So just good stuff.
Anniversary of the show, just to be clear.
That's right. Yeah. Tom and I not in a domestic coupling or anything like that. And so
dude, this is a huge episode, man. This is like one of the big ones. Austin 316 is born. Who the hell would have thought?
We've talked about the formation and the debut of, you know, the New Age Outlaws and joining DX and like how some of these groups, but this was, like you said, this was the birth of Austin 316 came from this. And so
this is the birth of the biggest star in the history of wrestling. To me, Hogan's the biggest star because he's the most recognizable in history. The biggest box office draw was Steve Austin. I mean, just based on merch and the attendance. I mean, they were doing the gates they were doing at that time. But regardless, man, this is the beginning. And, dude, this is a really, really good match. And, I mean, Mark Merritt, awesome guest, and excited to have him on The Payoff. So, dude, this is good. Any housekeeping stuff we need to get out of the way?
Yeah, like you said, great to have him back on the show. You know, love having him here. And so, you know, we'll plug his social media. He's at Mark Merrow, but then for us as well too, you can always find The Payoff at Payoff Pod. You know, it's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that different stuff. You know, spread the word about the show. That's what we need from you. Make sure to go back. Like I said, we've got lots of episodes in our history. Lots of good stuff going all the way back to that first episode with Vicky Guerrero, and then having her back as well recently as well too. So make sure to go back, check out all that stuff, as well as Mark Merrow's previous episodes. Had some great stuff with him as well, too, kind of going down that road. So, yeah, make sure to check that out. So, Tom, what else you got?
Dude, I got nothing. I want to jump right into this. But, again, as always, thank you for supporting the show. I think it goes without being said, but, you know, the reason I wanted to cover this was, you know, when we had Mark Merrow, I was like, man, we got to talk about this match, right? Like, this has to be one of the ones we talk about. So, certainly excited to have him on. It's historic, right? I mean, this is Austin 316 being born. It came out of nowhere. I mean, it came on a whim. This wasn't, you know, hey, we're going to make t-shirts and this is what we want you to say. And this is some scripted promo by some douchebags that work for a minute on a Hollywood sitcom. This is just a great sports entertainer finally getting his big break, coming up with a great line. Doc Hendricks' reaction to it's great. Man, I love these old King of the Ring pay-per-views and the old sets. You know, you got Sable and Mark Merrow in there. That's going to be fun to talk about too. So there's just a lot of stuff going on with this one and more that I'll get into. But and it's Austin pre-neck injury. So we get a really great match from him where he's more of that kind of technical wrestler that's bouncing around the ring. So, man, awesome stuff. What about you, Jeff?
Yeah, this is one of those, like I've always said, and you know, you and I both, like, we wish we had more of these tournament style kind of, you know, King of the Ring, Queen of the Ring, not Brawl for All, but like, you know, just some of these types of things that, you know, to give titles out. You're kind of done it recently with, you know, the Intercontinental title and the tournaments. And, you know, I love this stuff. And the fact that they're not doing more of it, especially like nowadays, to kind of, you know, something to sell, I think it's a lost opportunity. And so King of the Ring is like, you know, it's one of the great ones. We've talked about it a little bit before, of course, but this was the King of the Ring. This is, for me, put it on the map. This, you know, made me aware of it, made us all aware of Stone Cold. So that's why I'm just excited to kind of get into this, talk about it. It's just exciting.
Yeah. And, you know, one more thing I'll say, because I think it's important, is this King of the Ring, it was, you know, they got into their groove where it started to become, okay, who's the next big star? So, you know, Brett winning it. I mean, Brett was Brett. He was already over, but it was a good tournament. And then you had, you know, Yokozuna and Hulk Hogan on that show as well for the world title. Owen winning it the second year. It was like, all right, we're gonna make this guy. We're going to put something behind him. As time went on, I mean, they really found a great groove of it meaning something. So Owen used it to get the world, you know, he got a world title shot later that summer. And then Austin 316 being born, Triple H, you know, now being a big star. I think about, you know, Lesnar, right? I mean, Lesnar being, you know, getting the world title shot. So they did a really good job with this. And man, I like it. I like how it was done. Mabel, you know, you may not have agreed with Mabel, but again, it was, hey, let's give someone the world title shot. Let's make him over as a monster heel. So again, I loved what they did with this tournament at this time. And you always still got really good matches outside of the tournament on these shows. Let's not forget, you know, Mick Foley and Undertaker was a King of the Ring match. So Jeff, let's jump right into the build. So here we are. It's King of the Ring 1996, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, June 23rd, 8,700 attendance. It's kind of a small arena. I, you know, this is the Mecca arena. So I don't think it's where the Milwaukee Bucks played, but it might have been. Jeff, maybe you can look that up. But 8,700, so smaller venue. I'll quickly run through the card. We had this Stone Cold Mark Mero match opening it up. And then some other King of the Ring matches that you're going to get into. A tag team match of the Smoking Guns, who were accompanied with Sonny, of course, during that pairing, defeating the Godwins. The cover of this, the poster for this show was the Ultimate Warrior. Okay. Just crazy to think that he was back during this era. And man, it just didn't work out. But the guy was so over with the fans. Defeated Jerry Lawler in a 4-minute match. We had a Mankind Undertaker match. Okay. So that's pretty fun during the summer when they had this feud. And that obviously, you know, it was on and off for years. An IC title match of Ahmed Johnson defeating Goldust. And then the main event, which was after the King of the Ring final, and that's Shawn Michaels defeating the British Bulldog. Mr. Perfect being the special outside enforcer, which is fun. Those two had a pretty good feud during the summer as well. So a lot going on in this show. Just a couple other things in the business. The free-for-all match on this before the show would start was the Body Donnas beating the New Rockers. You remember Leif Cassidy, one half of the New Rockers, otherwise known as Al Snow. Jeff.
Classic Hall of Fame tag team right there. But anyways, yeah.
Yeah. You know, now what I forgot, you know, I'm so fixated on the theme of this show, which is Austin 316 being born. What I forgot about is a little something else happening down south in WCW. Oh, I don't know. Scott Hall and Kevin Nash are entering. We're about to get the NWO. So WWF is already suing WCW over the use of Hall and Nash because it felt like they were being portrayed too closely to their gimmicks and that they were part of the WWF. So you had that going on. Now, you know, everyone always busts on Meltzer for saying Mabel was going to be the third man or having no clue who it was going to be. But our good friend Wade Keller actually also had some speculation as well. So let me just read this because it's a lot of fun, and then I'll let you talk about the storyline. All sources indicate WCW is still deciding who the third man will be. Lex Luger was supposedly slated at one point. If it's not Luger, wrestlers considered but were scratched include the 1-2-3 Kid, Jeff Jarrett, Bret Hart, Bam Bam Bigelow. The three top candidates were Tatanka, Crush, and Mabel, although none are considered blockbuster surprises. Other names rumored are Brian Clark, Roddy Piper, and Isaac Yankum. I'm not making that up. So
it's a hell of a write-up right there from the Observer.
And it just goes to show you, the point I'll make to all that is we had no fucking clue who it was going to be. And that's why that Hogan surprise, my God, it was just something else. So I can't wait to cover that one at some point. But the point being, what a major summer. Austin 316's born and the NWO is created. Like, these are the two biggest things that basically happened during the Monday Night Wars. You had Steve Austin on fire and you had the NWO. So pretty cool. Yeah, man, a lot to discuss, a lot to break down. So, give us, you know, if there was a storyline standpoint to get us to this, and then talk through the King of the Ring tournament for us.
Yeah, so of course, King of the Ring, it's a single elimination. It's a bracket tournament. It started on May 27th, 1996. It was actually on an episode of Raw. You know, just a reminder for people so they, you know, in case they did know or just, you know, whatever, didn't know, whatever it might be, that it, while there was a King of the Ring pay-per-view, there was some lead-in matches that happened before that on the Raws and things like that. And so we've talked before about Mark Mero, and, you know, if you definitely go back, kind of check it out in our archives of him coming over from WCW, you know, being a part of, you know, the Johnny, you know, dropping the Johnny B. Bad, being Mark Mero, Sable as well, too, being all a part of that. So definitely go back and kind of check that. And so, it actually had Mero beating a couple different people. So the bracket started at Ahmed Johnson and Vader, Goldust and the Warrior, Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Jake Roberts, Jake the Snake, Bradshaw versus Goodwin, Stone Cold versus Bob Holly, Marty Jannetty versus Savio Vega, Mero versus Skip, which is what his first match was, and then Owen Hart beating Yokozuna. So, a lot of different names at this time, just kind of who was included and things like that. That was that first round that was on TV. You also had the quarterfinals, which were on TV. You had Mero beating Owen Hart in that one, Stone Cold beating Savio Vega, which gets us to this semifinals match, which was on the pay-per-view earlier, Stone Cold and Mark Mero, which is why we're here to talk about this stuff. So at this point, though, we do have to talk about Stone Cold, kind of his history, that he debuted, it was January 8th, 1996 on Raw. And so it was really less than 6 months, about 6 months prior to this when he, or this pay review when he debuted. Of course, he was awarded the $1 million championship. He was associated with Ted DiBiase at the time as well, too. His debut match was actually January 15th, where he actually beat Matt Hardy. And so, as well, too, he kind of had this period where, of course, we have to talk about the Ringmaster, his kind of first persona. He was built, you know, kind of having that. It just, while they would talk about Steve Austin, he was the Ringmaster at this time. There was a bunch of different names actually that were kind of proposed to him. Before we get to that point, there was the WrestleMania 12 where he, you know, according to the kind of report, he slipped off of the ropes. He was supposed to be in the match longer. And so you had that as well too. So he kind of, you know, different things. He actually feuded quite a bit with Savio Vega. And so interesting how that kind of played out. Where, you know, they had their match as well too together in the bracket of this, and so that was, you know, kind of predetermined if you kind of read between the lines on that. And so while he was the Ringmaster previous to this time, the names that he was kind of suggested to him, and then have you heard these before? The names that are the kind of the personas that they wanted him to play?
Yes, I have. It's incredible.
So for those of you at home, he had a bunch of different ones that were suggested to him. Of course, we all know him as Stone Cold Steve Austin, but he was also, suggestions were Otto Van Ruthless, Ice Dagger, Ice Dagger, Fang McFrost, and Chili McFreeze, which, boy, if that's not Vince McMahon, who, what isn't? So,
Chili McFreeze.
Get out there. But of course, though, dropping the Ringmaster moniker, that he would end up going with Stone Cold instead. So interesting to think we could have had Ice Dagger Steve Austin, and we ended up getting Stone Cold. I don't know which is better. Maybe we'll put the poll out there this week, kind of see what, you know, which fans would have preferred. But, it's important because, you know, just, it didn't really have a true moniker to this point. And I think that's important to remember is we all know him as Stone Cold Steve Austin, but we joke about the Ringmaster and remember the fabulous, the blonde hair and, you know, having all that stuff. But at this point in WWF, he was not who we know him to be today. And I think that's an important takeaway with all of this, and kind of we'll get to it in the aftermath. But just very important to know that we had, you know, a very, you know, very early in his career, Stone Cold, at least with WWF, the first 6 months. And so that's important to kind of take away to this. So, Tom, what other thoughts do you have on the build on this one before we get to the match?
Man, I just don't understand how smart, talented people can't come up with some better gimmicks, man. If it weren't for Steve Austin being Steve Austin and giving some pushback, I mean, this, he would have fizzled out. He would have ended up working in ECW because he would have had some shit gimmick in the WWF and been out of it. I mean, how do you rebound from Chili McFreeze? You know, it's easy to be like, oh, well, it's Steve Austin. He would have been successful no matter what. Bullshit, man. Steve Austin could have been out of the wrestling business by, you know, 1998 had, you know, things not worked out properly. I know it's easy to say, oh, the cream always rises to the top. Dude, there are plenty awesome, talented people that never got a break. There's other people that certainly overachieved. All right. Mm-hmm. Like The Miz. I mean, he could have been a jobber. He could have never even gotten a shot. And he main evented WrestleMania. He headlined WrestleMania. There's a lot of guys that never headlined WrestleMania that, you know, were really talented. So my point being is, I mean, it's right time, right place, right gimmick, right era, right everything. And, you know, to think, oh, Steve Austin was going to be a big star no matter what. No, some things had to happen. He could have gotten a shitty gimmick. You look at some of the guys now that are great workers, but just the wrong gimmick, man. It's just, you can't ever be taken seriously. So I just don't understand why it's so difficult. Now, can everyone go by a normal name, have black trunks, go out there and drink beer? No, but it's like, you know, what's the harm in guys just being their natural self turned up to a 12 versus some bullshit gimmick? So anyways, that's all I have. Are we ready to get into the match?
Let's rock and roll.
All right. So for those that want to watch, it's the 5:30 mark of King of the Ring 96 that we're going to watch this with Mark Marrow. Again, pumped to have him on the show. 5:30 of King of the Ring 96. Pumped to have Mark Marrow here. Hope you enjoy it. It's an awesome match. So with that, let's get into the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
All right, we are here with Mark Marrow. Mark, welcome to the payoff. How are you today?
I am doing good. I see you got King of the Ring up on the film here.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about this match. You know, going into the evening, did you know that this was going to be a big night for Steve Austin? Were you trying to make sure that you put him over and made him look good? Tell us about you going into this match.
Well, first of all, I wrestled with Steve so many times because we were together in WCW when he was Stunning Steve over there. And this was his big night to shine. But you know what? The thing about wrestling Steve that was so cool was that he also, even though he knew it was his night, he's going to make you look good because he doesn't want to just beat a nobody. He wants to beat someone that is really gives him a fight, you know?
So when you worked with Steve in WCW, did you think that he had the makings of being a big star?
You know what? He was so talented, man. The thing about Steve I always appreciated was he was constantly learning. In other words, he would watch all the matches. Like, he would be behind the curtain watching almost everybody's match. So he knew everybody's in-ring personas. He knew their moves. And so he wrestled them. When he put things together, he just was able to put things together really cool and made the match really exciting. I had, like, this match right here, King of the Ring, was one of my favorite matches. Even though I lost this match, it was really one of my favorite matches.
The promo that he did when he won the King of the Ring, did you see that live? And if you did, what did you think of it at that moment?
Well, you know, I don't remember if I saw it live. I remember, obviously, they played it over and over and over again, Money Night Raw and stuff. I can't remember if I saw it live. We had a this match was pretty brutal. You know, I mean, you're going to see some spots where Steve really got hurt in this match. And, but he you would never know it unless, you know, you're in the ring with him. And obviously we talked about it after, but you'll see the spot I'm talking about. It's going to become coming up soon.
Yeah, point anything out to us that you see.
I don't know if yours is running like mine, but it's kind of like stop start.
Yeah,
mine's not running smooth.
Yeah, we're gonna have a couple issues just because I'm in a hotel. If it gets real bad, let me know, and then I can switch internet connections.
Okay, I'm just curious for anybody that's gonna be seeing it.
Well, they're not gonna see it. They're just gonna hear us. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Oh, I see. Okay. Very cool. Then I'm done. Yeah. Good.
Okay. Awesome. So let's. When you get into the WWF, how does this wild man gimmick come about? Who came up with it, and what did you think of it?
Well, it was a little difficult because you remember I was Johnny B. Bad, and it was a persona. It was so unlike me, Johnny B. Bad. It was a fun. It was like playing a character. You know, it was like really just a fun, high energy, flamboyant character. So when I came to WWF and Vince gave me this, we were trying to decide what we were going to do. And I think Vince really thought he could use something like Johnny B. Bad, but we couldn't because it was owned by WCW. So we were trying to come up with a name and everything. And he said, what about a wild man, Mark Mero? And I said, okay, but what's a wild man? He goes, well, can you do like a Tarzan yell? And I was like, oh boy, Vince, I don't got a very strong voice. I don't think I do a Tarzan yell. He goes, I like the wild man, Mark Merrill. And I really never caught on to it. And I don't think the fans ever caught on to it because it was just, they were so used to me being the character. It wasn't as, easy to play or to feel comfortable with.
Yeah, absolutely. Were there any ideas that you pitched? Was there anything that you thought might be good at this time for you?
You know what? Being that WWF, was so good at creating characters, I thought maybe they saw something I didn't see. Or, you don't want to rock the boat and say, I would never do that character or that. And looking back, it was like, I really thought maybe we could make this work. I don't know. They might know something I don't know, And, of course, still wanting to have some, flamboyancy to my character and coming out with a robe or cape or whatever, I just never really connected with the wild man character.
Explain, and obviously you speak to thousands and thousands of students a year, and I'm sure one of the things you talk a lot about is authenticity. So tell the listeners how difficult it can be to play a character that maybe isn't your authentic self.
Well, if anybody can relate to it, it's me. Because like I said, the Johnny B. Bad character was so outrageous and fun. You couldn't really, I don't know if you could use this word, but you couldn't make a mistake. You could be as goofy or as outrageous or, as flamboyant as you want. And whether people hate you or love you, they ended up watching you. But the wild man character, because I was kind of disconnected with it, I never fell into a rhythm where it always became difficult, as I'm performing every night to try and just find the niche or find what it was. And, and I think Steve could relate to that because remember, he came in as a ringmaster and it had to be so uncomfortable being what is a ringmaster, but when he changed that, his whole persona to Stone Cold Steve Austin, man, it just took off. And it's about finding that right character, that persona.
Was there, in your entire career, I guess, what character or what portion of your career do you think was maybe the most authentic to you or the easiest to portray?
Well, I mean, obviously the Johnny B. Bad character, because it was really like playing a character. I mean, Dusty Rhodes is the one that thought it up. And so I would have some of the best times with Dusty Rhodes where he would like coach me, because Dusty was pretty flamboyant himself, as we all know. And he would say, now kid, listen to me, watch me. I'm going to walk up there, and he'd do the little walk and stuff, and he'd walk up to the microphone and say, I'm so pretty, I should have been born a little girl. And it was like, oh my gosh. And we get laughing, and he'd say, and I'll say, oh hush, Johnny. And he'd do all these funny things. And of course, that was part of the character, And of course, the makeup and all the craziness that Dusty wanted me to do in Johnny B. Bad. It was a lot of fun. It's like, God, I love that guy. And we just became very close. And it was his brainchild, Johnny B. Matt. So that was a lot of fun to, you know, I guess give back to Dusty something that he kind of invented, you know?
Yeah. This match, is this something that you guys called in the ring, or did you heavily plan it? Who was calling the match? Just give us a little idea.
Steve was one of the best ring generals out there. You know, he was, we had a basic idea what we wanted to do. Of course, we knew the finish and everything, but he was so good at calling matches, you know, and I remember how frustrated we'd get if you didn't hear him the first time, you know, if he said something right here, like he'll say something to you as he's going by hitting you. And it's like in your mind, you're going, what did he just say? You know? And you're thinking, I don't want to screw this move up. So I'd say, what was it? What was it? What was it? And then he'd say it again right there. He'd say, he bent down to pick me up. He whispers it right there. And he was so good at that. And I'll say, I got it, got it. And then we go into a spot, like right here. He's going to throw me off the ropes. I know he's whispering in my ear. He's telling me as he's dragging me along the ropes what we're going to do. And so now he's told me exactly what I'm going to do when I go into this corner turnbuckle here.
That's wild.
So yeah, he was fun to work with.
So you said this was one of your favorite matches ever. I guess just off the top of your head.
When I say favorite, I mean, there's five matches that really stand out that I could think of that I really enjoyed, you know?
And which ones?
Pardon me?
I said, which ones?
Well, first of all, King of the Ring, because it really launched Stone Cold into the stratosphere of what he is known today as. And this was part of that whole, you know, winning the King of the Ring. Flying Brian, we had one at, I think it was War Games that we had. That was a 30-minute match that was incredible. And then I've had Eddie Guerrero was another guy I loved working with. And Diamond Dallas Page and I would, man, I'd say every time we wrestled, we'd give it our all. We just loved to, we always wanted to have the best match on the card. So when you had a guy that was just kind of like you, like I said, man, let's have the best match, you know, we'd always have a pretty good one. So those are some of the matches I really, really enjoyed having. And of course, anytime you wrestle Ric Flair is like a night off too.
That's what they say. That's what they say.
Yeah.
And anyone else that you didn't already mention that you really enjoyed working with, or maybe someone who was a little.
Yes, Triple H was another great ring general out there, could call a match. And Steve Regal, man, I learned so much from Steve Regal, especially at WCW. We wrestled almost every night for the longest time, going back and forth with the TV title. And I learned a lot from him, learned a lot from Triple H. There were some guys that just were really instrumental in helping me, get better and better. Because remember, when I started in 1991, I never wrestled before. I mean, I only had a few matches, independent matches, before I even made WCW. And it was difficult because remember, when you first started, I was so green, and they're putting me over guys like, you know, Ricky Moore, and guys been around for so long, you know, and that were teaching me along the way. And Ricky Moore was another one that when I first started would teach me stuff. Arn Anderson was another guy that was so patient with me, man, that really learned a lot from him and a lot of fun, you know. And I'll never forget, I was wrestling Arn Anderson in a match. And I think our match, the referee was the referee Pee Wee Anderson. And Pee Wee comes over to me in the corner and he said, Arn says, punch him in his face as hard as you can. And I'm thinking, why would he say that? What is he? And I said to the referee, I said, why does he want me to punch him in the face? And then he comes back, he goes, because he told me to tell you your working punch is killing him. Meaning that the punch I'm supposed to be pulling is really hurting him. So anyways, we laughed really hard about that after. He was just a great guy to work with and a lot of love for Arn Anderson.
So then how did you learn the business? I mean, were you just practicing in the afternoons of shows or were you just learning in the ring? I mean, how did you catch up to become really a pretty good worker?
When they gave me the Johnny B. Badd character, man, I didn't know a wrist lock from a wristwatch, you know, and I would just obviously working every night. I learned more and more, and the guys that were, like I said, were really patient with me. But then I started going down to WCW had the power plant. I'd go down to that. and really work a lot. And DDP was one of the guys I worked with down there all the time. Even though he was a manager, he was starting to become a wrestler, and we work out down there all the time. So I started getting better, and then I was even voted, like, I think most improved or something like that, one of the years for Pro Wrestling Illustrated, because I really started bringing my work rate up a lot, you know?
Well, I mean, in this match, you can see you're just flying around. I mean, you had a different look, you know? I mean, it was just everything you were doing was just a little bit different for this era. Guys weren't flying around doing hurricanranas, doing some of the stuff you're doing.
Well, you know, again, it's, you're working with such a talented guy that could make your moves look so crisp. And you know, we went a pretty good pace in this match, too. Steve had incredible stamina. You know, he could go really hard, which was really good. And I was always in pretty good shape. So it was fun to wrestle like this.
I mean, I know you obviously got hurt around this time. I mean, were you disappointed? Did you think, hey, look, I can be a world champion? You know, just tell us about this era, because I know they had, you know, big hopes for you.
Yeah, you know, when they brought me in, that was one of the things discussed, is putting the world title on me. And of course, I was really excited about that. And it was shortly after this that I blew out my knee. It was in Montreal. We were wrestling a triple threat match with me, Goldust, and Triple H, and for the Intercontinental title. And I blew out my knee so bad, I could hardly even walk. It was just bent backwards. And of course, I told Triple H, and he threw me outside the ring. And I had to be helped back just to get back there. And then, of course, total reconstruction, my knee, my meniscus, medial collateral, my ACL, you know, so it was blown out bad. And plus, I was out for 8 months at that time, too. So it was a difficult time, because you're wondering, could I ever come back and do the moves I used to do? Will I ever be the same? And I really did start limiting my high flying and some of the things when I came back, because I came back and I didn't want to aggravate it. You know, torn ACL is one of the worst things can happen to you. There's no fast recovery from it.
And you've been hit a little harder with the injury bug than probably the average wrestler, right?
Well, I was doing some things probably that were a little, like my finishing move was a wild thing off the top rope. You know, every night I'm landing on my knees, you know.
I was like a shooting star press.
Yeah. And so when you're doing that every night and the way you land, and
look at this one right there. I mean, do that every night.
Always taking a toll on your body and doing that. You can see Steve's face right here. See the blood. I mean, he really split his lip open bad.
And how exactly did that happen?
Well, there was a move before this that he flips me over the top of him, and I'm behind him, and I kick my knees up through his armpits. And what he was doing, he was looking down, and my foot kicked him right in the mouth. I mean, full tilt. I'm telling you, if he was sitting on his hands and knees, and I went and football kicked him, I couldn't have kicked him harder than I kicked him in that match. And he never lost consciousness. He never got dizzy. He just kept going, and his lip—it was completely split open. Like it was like you could pull it apart and look at his teeth. You know, it was that bad.
Was he upset with you at all?
No, not at all. Not at all. Steve was so professional. You know, I didn't mean it. You know, there was no ill will or intentions of hurting. I never felt horrible hurting him, you know?
Yeah, this was just a hell of an opening match, because this opened the pay-per-view. So this was the first thing on it, you know, in just 17 minutes. You guys, I mean, there's no real rest holds here. I mean, you guys are just taking it to each other.
Yeah.
When's the last time you wrestled a match?
Yeah. See how he just fell down there on purpose? Because we didn't have the move yet, and he was thinking of what he wanted to do. So he would pause and he'd say top rope, you know, and I'd go. Then we'd put him up on the top rope. But he was really calculated on how he did things, man.
That's probably the last hurricanrana he's taken off the top rope.
He didn't need to do that anymore.
When's the last time you wrestled a match?
2006.
Okay,
so 13 years ago.
And how are you feeling physically now?
Oh, incredible. Incredible, man. I've had 14 surgeries. Wow. But I just really feel like a kid again, man. I'm just, my body's in great shape. I have a personal trainer. I work out 3 times a week. I eat really healthy, too. More of a plant-based diet. Doing my DDP yoga. Got to give him a plug for that, you know. And one of his first stunners.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was it, man.
So looking back at that match, is it what you remembered, a really good match? Anything that stuck out to you?
You know what? What that match meant was to put Steve over. And I think I did a great job. It really got his stuff over. And then he had one more where he wrestled Jake for the finals. And that's when the famous Austin 316 came in and, you know, noted for that all over. You see his lip, how bad that is, man.
Oh, yeah.
That was a horrible, horrible kick.
Now, that was an awesome match. And I'm sure when fans go back and watch it, they're not going to realize, you know, how good of a match that was. And how, I mean, at that time, how good of a worker you were. I mean, you were just doing some really innovative, fun stuff.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that, man. But like I said, dance takes two, man. You can never do that with a guy that couldn't be as athletic. And just like I said, the ring general that Steve Austin is and was, that just incredible.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for joining us on the payoff and watching this match. That was great.
All right, man. God bless.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right, dude. We're back. What'd you think of this match? What'd you think of Mark Merrow? Hit us with it, Jeff.
Just absolutely, just classic. You know, I love this stuff. You know, just kind of hearing the stories and kind of getting into this. It's just one of those where... You know, hearing it from people that were there and kind of, you know, their perspective on it, like, it's just fantastic. Like, you know, and I'm sure, you know, we could interview, you know, Jake the Snake and he'd have, you know, his perspective on, you know, obviously it's being the kind of main event. But I think this is just, it's just great stuff to kind of hear where some of this stuff comes from and the stories and all that.
Yeah, it was awesome. Awesome match. You know, both these guys could work. I mean, it was a little different, Steve Austin in the ring, than we got later in his career, which was fun to see. And just loved it. Loved all of it, right? Not just the match, but just even the evening, because it was very, very significant. So loved it. Jeff, what, obviously we know some of this, but what happened following this match? And
yeah,
I know there's a lot you could talk about, but
right.
Walk us through it.
So this match in particular, you actually had a moment where Austin, and we could, you know, kind of see where Austin was hurt. And so it kind of, we'll get into that down the road a little bit and kind of what happened. But no matter what, you had Stone Cold hitting the stunner to beat Merrow. And so going on from that, you had the final round, which was Jake the Snake versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. You had the piece of this that's important is you had to remember, which Austin ended up winning that one, but it was really everything that happened after the match that was important. At this time, Jake the Snake had a persona where he was this, religious, Bible thumping, like born again Christian, that, you know, he, you know, that was who he was and kind of the persona that he was putting out there. But, and these guys had some back and forth a little bit, but the promo that he cut after was when he declared, as you said, the famous Austin 316. And so the exact quote was, and why, it, you know, we always forget, a lot of people don't even realize where it came from, but the foundations of it were, he said, "You sit there and thump your Bible and you say your prayers and it didn't get you anywhere. Talk about your Psalms, talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, I just whipped your ass." And so
incredible.
We all know Austin 316, like everybody. And so, you know, but I think even like some of our listeners, you know, don't realize where that came from. It wasn't just, you know, out of the blue or, you know, them trying to play off that. There was some storyline to that, how it was presented to us. And so there was all of that. And so really, it's hard to say, you know, I was kind of reading that, you know, is there, and this question I pose to you, is there a more famous kind of catchphrase or slogan in wrestling today? Even today, in the history of wrestling, has there ever been a more famous slogan or kind of catchphrase that you can think of?
Man, I mean, just I'd say the Austin 316 between this promo and that t-shirt. No, I mean, nothing sold more than it. So how could you say anything's more iconic? You know, I mean, you know, you can't. I mean, the NWO shirt sold a ton of them as well. Right. You know, Hulkamania and Say Your Prayers, Eat Your Vitamins. Yeah, it's up there. But I mean, to me, there's nothing more, you know, popular, iconic than that Austin 316. I mean, the amount of signs that were there during that era, I don't think anything's ever been over as much as that shirt, you know, that gimmick, anything, right?
I think you have to include it in. I agree with you. I think that in regards to what it did and how it changed the industry, because then this really led into the attitude era, or, you know, in the attitude area in a lot of ways with some of this stuff. But, you know, you have to include it with, like, if you smell what the Rock is cooking, like, you know, like the Know Your Role and Shut Your Mouth, like the Rock had, like, just some of those, you know, kind of famous ones. You know, what are you going to do when Hulkamania runs wild on you? But none of that stuff. Maybe the Rock, but like none of it sold merchandise. None of it is ingrained. Even like, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so. Like, and it's funny looking at some of these guys like the Rock, Stone Cold, Hulk, like Ric Flair and the Woo. Like the, like for some people, that's your wrestling Mount Rushmore. Like, you know, and so to have that, I think that, you know, and then like Suck It and DX and things like that. But yeah, I think that like Austin 316 and where that came from and what we got, just crazy. And so a piece of this though that I found very interesting and kind of how this kind of continued to play out was Austin actually, from what I read, who knows where it's at, that Austin actually wasn't supposed to win this tournament at the beginning, but that Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Triple H, was supposed to win it. But the problem was that just previous to this, so this match, of course, it taking place, like we said, it was June 1996. Wanted to make sure I had the correct month. Just previous to this was the curtain call. And so you had that May 1996, really about a month prior to this. So it's crazy to think if like Helmsley had won this over Triple H. And so, or yeah, excuse me, over Austin. And so, you know, having that and kind of, you know, if that backstory is true and all this other stuff, just kind of really weird how this played out. So, and that piece of it, but we got Austin 316. So with that, of course, and I kind of mixed this up in previous episode that, you know, after this, you had Austin and the very infamous episode of Pillman's Got a Gun segment and kind of doing that, which did not go over well on any level, and kind of having that. That's a story for a different day. We have all kinds of stuff there, but you know, kind of leading into the attitude era of all of wrestling and kind of this, you know, edgier type content. So Austin's really like winning this, his star only started to take off. And so that's exactly what happened after this, of kind of making him be the star of WWF. Mero, though, kind of went on to feud with Goldust, actually, which we talked about quite a bit recently. Underrated maybe for some people, but, you know, respected as well, too. That one of those, the two of them kind of having like SummerSlam as well, too, that summer, kind of going back and forth. And so just kind of interesting. So you had all this where, you know, he had a couple different feuds as well, too. Mero did afterwards of, you know, it was actually an Intercontinental Championship tournament. He beat Owen Hart, Farouk, a couple of different people, defending the title against Goldust. Just it was actually In Your House 10. Just all kinds of different things and kind of how this played out. And so both of them continued to have good careers. You know, really neither had been really around that long, but at least in WWF. And so just a kind of good stuff happening for everybody, kind of how it played out. You know, we know where Stone Cold ended up after this. Now we have that kind of hindsight to see that, but just really just good stuff, like just good wrestling. It continued and both guys were successful.
Well, I want to hear the write-ups for this particular match. I'm curious.
Yeah, and so I'll start with the PWI rankings as we have been. Austin was number 3 that year. For some reason, Mero was on the list twice, and so I don't know if he's 106 or 221. I don't know if that was like WCW or I don't know what the deal is there, but he was listed twice, so he's either 106 or 221. So yeah, whatever he got there. So The outright, the Pro Wrestling Torch gave this match 4 stars. It's, you know, kind of not going through the play-by-play, but the entire match was good with the final few minutes. Very, very good, which I agree with that one. Kind of the overall card on this one, and one of the write-ups of one of the beat writers, from a wrestling standpoint, it was excellent. All the matches lived up to their potential and everybody worked hard. The dud matches were at least kept short. The WWF has nothing to worry about. The last piece of this, and I think it's hard for anyone to disagree with it, Austin's interview stole the show. Which, yeah. And so, and then of course the Observer having, you know, again, this is a thumbs up card overall. This match actually, it was actually under or overshadowed by the Shawn Michaels Davey Boy Smith match. But this match did come in second on that one. You had the kind of different things as well too. And again, not going through the play by play on some of this. Some of it, there was a big Sable chant early. Owen then came up with a line that was so funny because it was clearly unplanned, where he said that Austin didn't bring a hose bag to the ring. Never thought I'd hear that term on the WWF broadcast. You know, Austin dominated. And then lastly, it was a great effort by both wrestlers. 3¾ stars. And so I thought this was interesting where you've got 4 stars, 3¾ stars. The final though, like the Austin Jake the Snake match, I thought, because I was just kind of curious and kind of how that one was perceived, that was only a 0.5 star. And so, at least from the Observer. And so,
well, but it's bullshit. That wasn't, it wasn't supposed to be a good match. It was just the point was, is that the aging baby face had the shit kicked out of him earlier by Vader, and he was in no condition to wrestle, and Austin just beat the hell out of him. I mean, it did what it was supposed to. Not again. You know, I'm going to sound like a lot of other people, but not everything has to be a 5-star class. Like, that's not the intent of it. It isn't, hey, we need one 15 to 20 minute 5-star match after another. The point was, I mean, I still remember, you know, because I remember like cheering for Jake. I'm like, maybe he's going to win. And I think they had said he was, you know, like in the hospital or his ribs were taped up or whatever. And like, can he win? I was cheering for Jake because I grew up liking him. And then Austin wins and it's like, oh man, this guy's like going to be a big star. And then he cuts the I mean, it was just, it was incredible. I mean, but again, it gives a shit about it being a wrestling match.
Right. Yeah.
That was absolutely. An angle. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, feel free. You go first. You obviously have some opinions. So what do you got in your score on this one?
So, okay. So my score, and again, our payoff score, it's not just about the match. It's about the payoff, the build, the aftermath, everything. So I'm factoring in the promo and kind of the whole package of this night. Okay. And I'll even put the Jake stuff and everything in there. Factoring in this match, which I thought was excellent, the Jake Robert angle match, which I thought was well done and it was good. And then that incredible promo and obviously what it would go on to be, all of that. And I may be being light on this one, but I got it at an 8.5. So it was pretty damn good, man. And again, I you could argue it should be higher. I don't know, but I got this at an 8.5. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was great. And again, it was part of a really good show. As well. So just great stuff. What about you?
Yeah, I am actually going to put it at a 7.5. I think it's just one of those. I do love a King of the Ring. I thought there was just a lot of good stuff. There wasn't, you know, just it didn't need a kind of huge build on some of this. And, you know, again, we have the hindsight to see like some matches were kind of those plants to build a story for after, before or something like that. So I understand that. And so I think it was good in that sense. You know, of course, it's all scripted. So we know where they're kind of going with this, some of that. But I think overall, like this, you can't – and I, maybe that is a little low because of what it did birth after this. But it's Stone Cold. It's what it is. It's what it gave us. I think it's fantastic. It's great to hear from Mero of kind of, you know, the input he had. But I'm a 7.5 on this one.
Awesome. It was great, man.
So take us home, buddy. What do you got here?
Dude, I got nothing. Thanks for supporting the show. Payoff Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And you know what, Jeff? That's the bottom line, because the payoff said so.
There it is.
Thank you, as always, for joining us on The Payoff.